Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
Castillo. Bryce brought up a story, which is really nice when Bryce decides to contribute with a story.
Oh, my God. What?
it's a good story. I don't know why I went all condescending on that. Oh, you think being an equal partner means you're an equal partner, Bryce?
Yeah, so...
No, you always have good stuff.
So this is a piece from The Verge about this new podcast venture called Luminary, which is aiming to be one part podcast app where you can, you know, listen to the shows that you listen to now, and one part exclusive publisher of premium podcasts. So you would pay them a subscription fee to get access to their new original shows from other people who are making podcasts that people like, but not those podcasts because those are existing podcasts.
Oh, wow. So it's a okay. So podcasting in general tends to be a free-for-all of RSS feeds, but this is like a walled garden within a good podcast app. So you have the ability to, like, for example, I guess you can subscribe to both After Talk and After Things and Weird Things.
Sure. Well, so I guess a similar analog, which I'm surprised this article actually didn't mention, is like Stitcher. Stitcher has exclusive premium podcasts, and you get them by subscribing to Stitcher, and you get them in the Stitcher app. But Stitcher also has a directory of all the other podcasts, and so it would be in that same vein, right? Of producing original premium podcasts.
Huh.
So they basically want to be a best-in-class app, a best-in-class free podcast app that you are listening to all your favorite podcasts, and then all of a sudden, and actually it just happened, I didn't know what Luminary was, but I was listening to a podcast today, I think it was the Bill Simmons podcast, and he's like, oh, we're doing one of their shows, Binge Mode. They're doing a Luminary exclusive thing where they went through 15 movies from the year 1999, and so now this like old movie review show is going to do a specific multi-episode deep dive into one fascinating year in movie history, and that will now be exclusive to Luminary.
Man, for the record, 1999 was an extraordinary year for cinema. It was amazing.
I always fight that it's the best.
I agree. A lot of them similar themes: American Beauty, Fight Club, The Matrix. Probably doesn't hurt that that's the year I quit my day job and decided to be a magician. And all of the movies were about doing exactly that.
So the other part of this news story is that as a part of their app launch, the New York Times and their family of podcasts, as well as Spotify's family of podcasts, because they just bought Anchor, they just bought Gimlet, have asked Luminary to not list their podcasts in that app, in their Luminary app.
But they can't ask that if it's just a public-facing RSS feed, right?
But if I don't know if Luminary will let you manually input RSS or if Luminary has its own directory, and they could ask to not be in the directory, or because otherwise they could.
Because Luminary is inserting, their whole point is they're inserting their own ads.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, there's an ad supported version, and they want to do, you know, listening data, right? That's what a lot of these app based premium services want also, is your listening data.
Oh, wow. So this is actually kind of close to what I was kind of half joking about is, you know, would you take a free version of Netflix if the only cost was your webcam had to be turned on and facing you the entire time you're watching? That's kind of exactly this.
Sure.
So what they're doing.
Yeah, and Stitcher does the same thing. Like, from a content producer, it's like, hey, can we put your thing exclusively here? Part of it's going to be, hey, this thing you boy free, can we put it here and put ads on it that you don't get money from? Or can we give us, you know, can we, I mean, it's, you know, from the content side is where Justin and I've had this conversation forever. We keep talking about everybody tries to come up with, now our podcast app is going to be, they're looking at the podcast pie and going, how do I get that money? And it's like the one thing is like, well, if everybody uses our app, we can put our own ads in there. And this is a model that's been tried and tried. And now they're like, oh, and we're going to offer subscription.
Right.
Been done. And no, we're going to, and they're doing an a la carte, pay $8 a month. And it's the same problem with YouTube Red and these other systems, though. It's like, great. I think Bill Simmons' share of the pie and Trevor Noah's share of the pie and Lena Dunham, they're going to get a different deal than, you know, we are, in that you start dividing up that, like, oh, well, you get this much per listen or whatever. Well, is that really where you want to go?
Well, and it's also ultimately you're building your platform on paying other big names to do exclusive content, which is a risky proposition because you ultimately are, they're going to be there as long as the money is there to pay them to do it.
And see Vessel.
Out, sure, Vessel was like that. Go90, I think, was doing deals, but that was like Verizon backed. Yeah. I think as a consumer, because I mean, I think we all listen to a good number of podcasts. If there was something really interesting and something that I heard that I was would draw me to the service, right? I would subscribe to a Luminary if I knew there were shows there that I liked. But I think one of the problems with all of these original programmings is that they can't latch onto the existing podcasts that are already very popular. They have to get those personalities to make new shows. And like you said, it's risky and you don't, I would be fine with multiple apps. That, I guess that's what I'm saying. I would be fine with multiple apps the same way that I'm fine with having Netflix and a Hulu app and an HBO app, you know?
What was the, because I just looked at there and I saw Lena Dunham, I'm like, what was, she was part of some other like launch of something else that was going to do these like exclusive group of shows and stuff. And then
I think that was Slate.
Yeah, Slate was going to get big into that, you know, and I'm sure she has a huge audience and put it on her. But it was like, I looked at that. I'm like, well, this is like the go to of like, oh, who do we get? Like, oh, we like Trevor Noah. Let's have Trevor Noah do anything. We like so-and-so. We're going to do this. You know, and the model was kind of like Sirius with Howard Stern back in the day. Was they paid Howard Stern this humongous amount of money to say goodbye to his regular radio audience, which was controversial.
I'll tell you what, man, that decision, like at the time it was like, well, he won and he got all the money. And now I'm just like, can't believe he took that deal. Can't believe he gave up everything he had for just a mere $150 million.
The key for him was, how do I throttle back for max money for less days?
Right.
That was really ultimately, like, he does like two shows a week now and nobody cares. And like, there's nothing that anybody can do about it. So that's his thing is like, all right, I'll get paid like I was still at the top of my game, but I'll just work less. And you know, maybe he would have gotten that deal on radio, but you know, terrestrial radio is such a famously weird and cheap world. I doubt it. But I don't know. I tend to think that extra content is great. Extra content can motivate me. The right extra content can motivate me to pay money. It has certainly been a boon for me. Like, you know, for example, with the PX3 podcast. We the Mueller report drops on Thursday. My regular podcast is on Wednesday. Then that means that people at the $3 level that get the Friday Minnesota and the Monday Minnesota will have two cracks of a very, very hot news story where they otherwise would not. You know, by the time that Wednesday comes around again, there will be barely a mention of the Mueller report. So it's like, timeliness, more of a deep dive, extra kind of content. I think that that's there. The question is, how do you get it to people? And that's why, the smartest thing I have seen in podcasting has been Patreon's custom RSS feeds. And I'm blown away that people have not ripped that off more, because the ability to import it wherever you want is just so crucial.
And I think the other part of the Luminary, the app side of it, is that they want it to be kind of a very heavy recommendation thing. So something where like when the Mueller report, that they actually reference it in this article. If we had had the app launched when the Mueller report, we would have, for people who were interested in politics, we would have a marquee at the top, and you would get recommended episodes of recent content like a politics or what have you.
So they're basically creating an analog to the YouTube algorithm for recommendations, where sure. It's like, look, we see what you're watching. You probably almost certainly are very, very interested in this.
Right. Which I think will be tough, because I know with YouTube, there's a lot of jumping around, right? I don't really care what channel something's on, if it's an interesting title and a thumbnail and all right. that stuff.
Like, I like think pieces about Rick and Morty.
Sure.
And you're like, oh, here's another one.
And from that's what that, yeah.
Brand name I don't care about.
Where with podcasts, you know, at least for me, it's tough for me to even give something a try because it's like, oh, well, I have to download an episode, or I have to subscribe to get an episode, and then I'm sitting in my thing, and am I even going to listen to it? And they're long. Podcasts are generally, all the ones we do are an hour plus.
I think it's a big part of it. So, I had this conversation, I think it's with you, Justin, was we're talking about how you recommending a podcast isn't the same as, hey, watch this 6-minute YouTube video. You need to make it granular, recommend episodes. Some podcast apps and stuff are trying to get more granular, like, oh, listen to this part of this podcast. But that assumes somebody goes out there and makes it granular. With this model, like, I don't know anything, but I know that the, hey, pay that one price, get everything, is a content creator. It's great for books that I've had out there for a couple of years that aren't getting pushed as much, and I put them into like Kindle Unlimited. Kindle Unlimited's wonderful. But for brand new releases and things like that, it's the last place I want to put them, because I have an audience that will pay me or will pay full price or close to that. And like with Justin's extra content, it's like, do I say, oh, go over to this other service, which I make a tiny amount from, or use Patreon? Like we said, Patreon's been brilliant.
Sure. I bet. I think.
Oh, bring them old dollars over to daddy.
See, the Patreon model is such a good avenue for small and medium sized creators, that I think this Luminary stuff, and with a lot of these other, you know, Stitcher and Spotify also going into premium content and subscription services, I think they're only aiming for big name podcasters who would never make a Patreon and would have to rely on ads, and ads are, you know, fickle, and they come and go. And if you know, oh, they're making an order for, you know, 6 months of some concept, and they'll pay me up front, or they'll pay me, you know, in advance or something, then I think that's where that works. But for you know, the people listening to this show for creative advice, you know, even we would not really be at that table or that
discussion. And again, this is another chime in for good job, good going, Patreon. Like the Night Attack model, I think really lands in terms of there being an honesty to what you're getting. Yes, you cross the threshold into paying literally anything, and now you double the amount of time we get to hang out, because sure. We're aware that what we're doing is we're enjoying our one-way friendship. And hanging out with you at the gym, at the bar, on your drive, or whatever. And so you currently get for free an hour and change of time with us. Now you get double that. Sure. We are very clear that it is rockier content in the pre-show and the after show, but it is a fact that we are hanging out with you longer, and sometimes the very best stuff happens in there.
Sure. That but if you're like a Radio Lab, where you're a very highly produced show, it's hard to scale in that same way.
Correct. Because then it's like, oh, this is a really good episode. Is it too good for us to put behind the wall? Should we have that be a public facing or a private facing thing? And I like the fact that we don't have to face that with the current Patreon thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that, like, where Netflix has gone is, you know, Netflix was an alternative to. You couldn't watch the things that were on Netflix elsewhere for free legally. You know, you it was another destination. Things could go from box office to home video to Netflix or whatever. And then Netflix said, you know, let's just start producing our own stuff. And it's a model that's hard to apply with podcasts. Producing a TV show or movie is expensive, you know, and it takes a Netflix-sized entity to do several of them well. Producing a podcast, even a quality podcast, you know, I'm sitting with three people here who do a really good job of produce podcasts as good a quality as anything I'm going to see on Luminary. And the problem is that I don't know. They're like, yeah, we're going to go get these big names here and we're going to pay them big checks to get them on board. Wonderful. I don't know if they're going to consistently have the quality of, you know, a Modern Rogue or, you know, politics, politics, politics or whatever.
You know, there's a streaming platform that I'm not going to name that we might be streaming on now, theoretically, that very much doesn't believe in out and out paying for content. Like
the Pornhub,
famous people to come and just sort of stream. Like they're always interested in trying to get people to do it, but ultimately, they've recognized that you can pay a outlet, like let's say pay a BuzzFeed, to say, all right, could open up your channel, and they'll take that cash, and they'll buy, you know, they'll hire a bunch of people, and they'll do a bunch of things. They'll have their runway for 2 months. And then when that money runs out, they'll come back to the platform and say, cool, look at these numbers we got. Wait, another check, please.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you're just giving that mouse a cookie forever and hoping that there's runway that at some point they're like, oh, we're making so much money on this channel, we won't have to ask for a check. But spoiler alert, mm-hmm. They're always gonna want to ask for a check because you're building their platform.
There's a similar dynamic going on, kind of within games public relations right now, in terms of instead of giving stuff to outlets and proper channels to review games and preview games, whatever, to just give them to influencers or to fans and to have them stream it on Twitch, because it's cheaper and because those people are usually more likely to say nice things about a free thing that they were
given.
They're
more enthusiastic about the free game they just got.
Right. And it's I think in the podcasting world, I mean, I know that there are tons of huge podcasts and very, you know, big heavy hitters, but I think there's also such a large population of small and medium-sized creators that I don't know, man. It's tough. It's like having public access and Netflix on the same TV channel.
That's a good way to put it.
Here's the biggest thing, and to go back to something you said a little earlier, Bryce, mm-hmm. I don't care about your recommendations for me podcast-wise. Like, for me, to get on a podcast, I need, like, one of five people I know and trust rave about a thing, and only then, after I dismiss them twice, will the third time I'd be like, okay, sure, I'll try it, and then I'll either like it or I won't. Like, my finicky taste for like what I'm going to try and what I'm going to enjoy is so specific that I almost immediately reject somebody else, you know, God forbid, an algorithm spitting something as personal as a podcast.
Yeah, some of them, the way they want to work is what your friend, they want to have the social aspect. I think Loomer does it too. Like, your friends like this, and that increases the likelihood of like, mm-hmm. oh, I'll check this out. But I want to make a little point.
Sure.
You look at when we're talking about, oh yeah, we went to those content creators, we got them to create the stuff, and you know, we got that budget, we got that $20 million to spend on getting people onto our platform, which everybody does and thinks is a great idea, but it's like, well, they make them stay. You know, BuzzFeed. You know, BuzzFeed was one of those brands of like, let's go pay BuzzFeed to go bring BuzzFeed in here. Whose videos get more views on average, BuzzFeed or, I'm looking at the stats right here, The Modern Rogue?
Go on.
You know, I think on average, Modern Rogue videos get more views.
Wow.
You know,
well, and that does make sense if we're talking about in average, because BuzzFeed can be very hot and very cold.
And BuzzFeed has a lot of different arms, right? Like, they have a big main channel that's all the big stuff, but then right. they have smaller ancillary lifestyle channels,
right? And I guess the same could be said with Scam Nation has always been a feast and famine kind of thing, where sure. it's like it either does 40 or 50,000 or, you know, millions of views, oftentimes not much in the middle, whereas Modern Rogue is every release 100,000 people show up in lockstep, and it's like we have to go out of our way with something very weird or off brand to not get that 100,000 to show up.
Mm-hmm. And my point is that you're an operation that is, you've got a good team, you know, a good group of people there. You've been in it for a while. You're a small operation. You know, you're a 3-person team that does this stuff?
Closer to 5
4
nowadays.
Or 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So BuzzFeed, a lot more. BuzzFeed Video. BuzzFeed Video is a minor cable station, okay? And I'm saying in the content things, when people are like Luminary going like, who are we going to partner? We're going to go find the BuzzFeeds because it's got the brand name and all that. Consistently, it's not as much value, you know? Like, you know, and I can see if you're going to bring in a PewDiePie or somebody who is really big, but also you don't get PewDiePie in a world of Luminary or this, as I understand it, or Spotify is doing the same thing. These people don't bubble up. And the problem is that you then go to people who are like, and like, they brought in a certain cable personality who like, oh, we all love this person. Guess what? I've seen their numbers. You know what? I can name, you know, there are 1,000 podcasters I can name right now who cover news and politics who get more viewers, maybe a couple hundred, you know, they get more viewers than this person does on their cable show.
Sure. Well, and that's the trouble with trying to sell people on podcast. Like Justin was saying, you know, for especially people who are new to podcasts or maybe aren't even interested in podcasts, knowing that there's a show from Trevor Noah or Karama from Queer Eye or from Lena Dunham will get them interested in it, in this service on the name alone. Or they've got the Planet Money guy here, the How I Built This guy doing original shows. And so that's they're going for big names because it's hard to sell people on something long form like this that you can't easily make like teasers or
trailers. Now, I will say that there's tremendous value in that usage data that is largely untapped. There was a Darknet Diaries episode where he was utterly aghast at how soft the Apple iTunes podcast charts are. Mm-hmm. He never quite got to the real number. He was just amazed that you could buy top placement or being in the top, whatever. Sure. But what he never got to was the realization that just in a heavily fragmented market, not everyone uses the Apple podcast app. And as a result, right. Yes, they do track that stuff, but they are a minor player in that big, wide space. And there is no way. So all these people who are quoting their
in terms of players or directories.
Well, first of all, for the directories or the top lists is generated like current real time number of new subscriptions. People hitting that subscribe button. There, think about like you get to hit that subscribe button once, and then it lives forever and ever and ever. And if you don't use the Apple podcast app, then your vote never even gets logged on it. So it's not wild that somebody in Indonesia is spending half an hour clicking subscribe on multiple accounts and that you show up in the top 10 because you went, you know, because if you have 300 new subscribers in an hour, then congratulations, you're a top 10 podcast in all of Apple iTunes. Yes. So, but likewise, all of, I think I use iCatcher just out of inertia. That's the app I use. I think about how many, every time I sync and podcasts are downloaded, there's no way for them to ever know which of these I ever listened to. And there right. There's gigabytes of data that I will never, never get to, but it shows up as a listener review, even though like there are many podcasts that I've gotten angry at, but not so angry as to unsubscribe. Mm-hmm. So they continue to download and they continue to report those numbers.
Sure.
And so as a result, I think that there is a place for something like the Luminary app to take advantage of like actual user data. But it sounds to me like they're complicating it unnecessarily with this walled garden thing.
I mean, but I think that's they're basically just doing a fancier version of what Stitcher has done, even down to the idea that, you know, Stitcher was controversial 7 years ago for dynamically inserting ads into RSS feeds that you would or rather like. Because they own the player, mm-hmm. they would jam an ad in between you, like, you know, your show ending and then another show beginning. So people would get upset that it's like, oh, well, my show ends and the next thing you know, there's an ad I don't get paid for. And well, that was Stitcher, mm-hmm. you know, applying their Stitcher tax. So I don't know. I fare thee well. I hope that there is the idea that there's more money coming into the business of podcasting is a good idea. That's awesome. Because that's the funniest part. To go back to something Andrew said initially, when the big company comes in and gets the VC funding and they're like, yep, how can we get in on all the money being made in podcasts? It's like, ha ha, fools, the chest is empty. Like, there is no money in podcasting.
Congratulations, you are the big money in podcasting. How can we get you?
Well, you know, it's a strange thing, too, because, like, they had an interview with the founder here, and he mentioned, he threw out this quote, which was, you know, like, right now, Spotify plans to invest $500 million in podcasting. They clearly want to own a big part of it.
Right. I mean, they bought Anchor and Gimlet, two big podcasting services/publishers.
Yeah, and they want to take it seriously, which is something that another company, which shall remain nameless, which has had a tremendous interest and has de facto owned podcasting and also has a massive streaming service, does not seem to care about podcasting or to have those kind of analytics integrate into what you are listening to.
Yeah. In the case of a company like Apple, for example, you know, they don't make any money on podcast app. You know, they don't put ads in there. They don't do anything. It's a thing they create as a service, and that's why it's part of the reason why there's just no data. It's like they're not incentivized to figure out.
They finally added a data portal like a year ago.
A couple years ago, iTunes started gathering some data from the people using. I guess people using the podcast app so that you can
let me clarify because Apple doesn't make any money on it. They've got three engineers working on that. It's not like Google's YouTube monetization arm and whatever. Like they change the way it does. And because I use their podcast app all the time and they have a lot of data, but they're not, it's like Apple Books, you know, like iBooks, like, oh, we're going to do books. I'm like, great. Like, yeah, we're going to have this team over here do it and whatever. We don't care. And then you're like, wow, looks like you guys don't really care. Because it's not an iPhone. So Luminary, the head of Luminary said the entire podcast industry has only spent $10 million on advertising. I was like, how do you quantify that? You know, how do you, I don't know.
So these are podcasters buying ads on other podcasts?
No, he advertisers says, spending money he on says how he's confident because they just got $100 million round to invest. He's like, it's only spent $10 million advertising, built an audience of 62 million listeners. You know, that's how many people listen to podcasts. You know, and he's like, oh, if we spend X more money on it, think of how big it will all be. You know, so about, you know, how they're going to do like big, they're doing big ad buys for Luminary to promote. You know, that's his whole thing is.
Which feels understandable because for as much as podcasting doesn't make Apple money, podcasting doesn't make podcasters a lot of money except for, you know, the very top, you know, anchor shows of various networks. And that
I guess my point is that he's using this weird metric to say, like, I don't know, how many times have I promoted or we talked about promoted podcasts and all that to equate to, like, you spend $10 million to promote a movie and you get this return. You know, like, there's only $10 million been spent on promoting podcasting. Look how big it's. Well, let's count all the hours and all the. It's just a weird. I am saying it's a very startup-y CEO metric to show this is why we're different, because this isn't. It's like, well, that doesn't really, you know, that's not. It doesn't have 62 million listeners in podcasting because somebody spent $10 million to promote it.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, any picks?
Yeah. My pick. Oh, I had it all picked out, so to speak.
I'll pick my podcast app that I like, Castro. It's a paid podcast app, but I like it. It automatically downloads the episodes that I want into a playlist that I can then order. And I don't know. I like the interface.
I use Overcast. Overcast is great. I pay it has a premium feature, which I do pay for. It's like a couple dollars a year or something. But they also will let me upload files, so I can upload audio files and it will show up alongside my podcast. It's got the smart speed thing where instead of speeding up the sound of everything, it'll try to cut out silences. But it will have speed stuff. It's got voice boost. So if you're listening to someone who maybe doesn't have the best equalizing or compression, it will kind of normalize stuff. You can set up, you know, automated lists. So I have a playlist of like all the work stuff that I've got and then a playlist of all the stuff that I listen to on my free time. And it's pretty nice. I like that. Overcast.
Yeah. Nice. I use iCatcher. What I like about it is I haven't had to install it ever because I got it once like 10 years ago, and that's where all my podcasts are. It's fine. They're all fine. Whatever.
My pick is Tesla's Navigate by Autopilot mode. It's kind of really awesome. Driving down the highway, you've got destination. Little option says this. Do you want to do this? You double click, and the car drives and changes lanes and does it all for you, and you get to where you want to go. It's been fun. Really like it.
Yeah, that's wasn't there a big news story about the price of Autopilot going up?
Yeah, they did a thing where they dropped Autopilot down to like $2,000, and it was the one I had the full self-driving thing or whatever the upgrade was. But anyhow, I have the full package for it, whatever, and it's nice to be one. It's nice to be on the highway, and one, just Autopilot's been great for just staying in your lane. And now what it'll do is it'll be like, hey, do you want to turn here? And you can either say confirm to let it change lanes, or you can say, nah, I trust you. You change lanes when you need to.
Yeah. We're seeing a video here of I guess the full auto or the full self-driving in city. I didn't realize that they had city driving. I thought it was only highway, that highway navigation assist like you were talking about.
Yeah. I've been using it in city stuff. This one they show like stopping at stop signs and stuff. That's coming, but I don't have that. That's not out yet.
Oh, I see.
But it's kind of amazing. It's a different kind of driving. It really is cool.
It's pretty cool.
So if you're looking at a new car, take a look. I'd say, you know, go to a Tesla showroom, but it's hard to know this week if they're going to be there or they're going to go online and they're going to decide they're going to go back to showrooms. I don't know.
Right.
Great product. Crazy company.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.